Welcome to Middle School Matters podcast number 708, Gradual Release in Middle School. We've got some jokes for your classroom. We've got some wonderful resources, and we're going to talk about ISTE just a little bit more. So without further ado, here's the wonderful, the magnanimous, the Mr. Troy Patterson.
All right, welcome back to the show. I am Troy Patterson, and with me is the world's greatest co-show host, Mr. Sean McGurr. Hey, Sean.
Well, hello there. How are you?
I'm good. Welcome back. It's summertime and
it is.
Things happen. So, but yeah. We're back and it's now August. It's the 1st of August already.
It is. It's my dad's birthday.
Yeah. Summer goes quick, doesn't it?
It does. Time flies when you're having fun.
Just a quick thought here.
Okay.
And this one is, we'll start out with one, a special joke just for Dave Bidlowski.
Okay.
This is a language arts / science joke.
Okay.
You ready?
Yes.
I before E, except after C, has been disproved by science.
Oh, I think you like that one.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I see your method there too. Yeah.
Do you know what happens if you believe in 12.5% of the Bible?
No. What? There's all kinds of theological ramifications here, Troy.
It's
a deeper question than you're going for.
Yes, you would be an atheist.
Yes.
Atheist.
Yes.
Yeah, no.
You would be one atheist. That's true.
Okay.
Yep.
I figured that was a risky one, but I was willing to take it on.
Show title, Troy Puts His Eternal Soul in Jeopardy.
Oh, a friend of mine lost her job as a set designer.
Oh, no.
Yeah, she wasn't very happy, but she left without making a scene.
Ah. Mm. Wow, didn't even get started.
After that, she decided, to get into better shape. So she went to the gym instructor, and she said, "Can you teach me how to do the splits?" Oh. And he asked how flexible she was, and she said, "I can't make it on Tuesdays."
Oh, that may have been the problem with the first job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, if the internet had a boat,
yes,
where would they park it?
I do not know.
In Google Docs.
Oh, sure. Sure. Yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I blame Mother Earth for all of the earthquakes.
You do?
Yeah. It's her fault.
Oh, I got you. I got you.
What do you have if you meet a cranky sheep and cow?
Cranky. I don't know. Do you turn the crank? Don't blow the horn. That's for sure. I don't know. What do you do?
No, you have animals in a bad mood.
Oh.
Yeah. Do you like that one?
That was good. That was good. Okay. I like that one. Yeah.
And I know you don't have a pet bird.
I do not.
But if you did have a pet bird,
okay,
and the bird sees you reading the newspaper,
okay,
does it wonder why you're sitting there just staring at the carpet?
That's a good question. That's a good question.
Here's one of those things that I know you might have caught yourself wondering.
Okay.
How much does a Grecian earn?
Oh, yes, especially since I teach that part of history, yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's see if we can get this back on track and turn this over to the wonderful Mr. Dave Bidlowski. This week, he has another terrific section on building science literacy, which is really cool. And I want to talk about a little bit about later on as well. But here, without further ado, is the wonderful Mr. Dave Bidlowski in the Middle School Science Minute.
Hi, this is Dave Bidlowski of K12Science.net, and this is your K-12 Science Podcast. I was recently reading the May-June 2026 issue of Science and Children, a publication of the National Science Teaching Association. And I read an article in the section Science 101, written by Matt Bobrowski, who writes a question and answer column. And the question was, how can I build science literacy for lifelong learning using thermal insulation? And he said that it's best achieved by not focusing on the facts of science, what we know, but rather on how we know it. Also, conveying the processes of science will help students to understand why science is reliable and why and how scientists are able to be confident in their findings. When students learn that science is not just a set of facts, but a way of asking questions, testing ideas, and using evidence, they gain skills that will carry them into adulthood, regardless of whether they become scientists. The most powerful approach is to anchor science in curiosity and everyday experiences. Encourage students to ask why and how do we know about ordinary things, plants growing, shadows changing, materials feeling warm or cold. When students collect data, make observations, and talk about what they notice, they begin to see themselves as capable of doing science, not just learning about it. Equally important is modeling, how to think with evidence. Have students explain their ideas, compare results, and eagerly revise their thinking when new information appears. This builds habits of mind, skepticism, openness, and reasoning that extend far beyond science class. So he suggested doing a simple classroom activity, understanding thermal insulation. And see, he said that students can begin with a simple real-world question, such as, which material keeps something warm the longest? Each group starts with two or three glasses of warm to hot water and measures the starting temperatures. Then they wrap the glasses and cover the tops in different everyday materials, such as paper towel, aluminum foil, fabric, bubble wrap, nothing, and measure the temperature over time, say every 5 minutes. This introduces observation, fair testing, and basic data collection. Students record their measurements in a simple table or draw picture graphs. So students should then look at what is heat and how does that explain the results that they found in doing that simple experiment. To answer the why question, students need to understand what heat is. One important point is that the hotter something is, the faster the molecules are bouncing around and hitting neighboring molecules. This explains why you get burned when you touch a pot, which is hot, on a stove. Because the pot is hot, its molecules are moving very fast. When you touch the pot, the fast-moving pot molecules slam into the molecules in your skin. That makes the molecules in your skin move very fast, which means that now your skin is hot. A second important point is that heat energy always moves from warmer objects to cooler objects, never the other way around. So, for the container of warm water to cool off, heat energy must move into a surrounding cooler region. The towel or bubble wrap contains many tiny pockets of air, and air is a very poor conductor of heat. So, trapping the air in a small space greatly slows down the movement of heat energy. We call materials through which heat passes very slowly insulators, or in the case we're talking about here, thermal insulators, as opposed to electrical insulators or sound insulators. So you can check students' understanding by asking, besides keeping things warm, would the towel or bubble wrap also help keep things cold? And the answer is yes. Keeping cold things cold means preventing heat from outside of the container from getting in. As an example of how it works both ways, the same cooler that you'd put cold beverages in to keep them cold can also be used to keep a cooked turkey warm as you transport it to Thanksgiving dinner at another location. So, thermal insulation is like a two-way bouncer, keeping heat from sneaking in or out. The activity, while simple, builds science literacy by teaching students that science is a process of asking questions, testing ideas, using evidence, and explaining results. Skills they will use far beyond the classroom. And this has been your K-12 Science Podcast.
Well, we're back, and you get to finish up, I think you'll finish up today, the ISTE experience, or maybe not?
Sure.
How long can we stretch out the ISTE experience?
Abed on WhatsApp, he's drawing it up and making it last, he'll make it last all year long. And then ISTE, of course, on the social media, ISTE has been also, you know, doing some things. I think they'll make it last all year long as well, too.
But yeah.
I'm not as intense as those guys. We talked about a number of different things. Let's touch on a couple things from the show floor. So I went to the exhibit hall, and I spent more time there this year than I spent last year. Just because there's some things I wanted to talk to some folks about. Like I had questions. I talked to the iReady people, and it turns out my admin, who says, no, they have to have so many minutes per week, is not doing what iReady tells them to do. So I don't know where they got that from.
Mm.
But do I be the guy who goes back and says, no, I talked to Ken, you know, the Ken from iReady. And Ken says, you're full of baloney. And actually we're right. Anyway, so I'm looking forward to that conversation. I talked to some folks from some other, places that, Linewise, the guys who do the web filtering.
Yes.
And I said, man, we are having a problem with this. You know, is there anything, you know, you guys could do to help us with that? And the guy goes, well, yeah, we got this whole bank of videos to show you how to do all that stuff. I was like, wait, what? They go, yeah, you just have to turn on the Library Resource Center here. And he showed me where it was. And I said, when I look at mine, I don't see that. He goes, oh, well, your admin has to turn it on. Wait a minute. There are help videos and all they have to do is turn them on. Yeah. He goes, what district? He looked at it. He goes, oh yeah, Robin. Yeah. He says, I'll tell you what. He says, message me and I'll ask Robin to go turn it on for you. I was like, I have to ask?
Yeah.
But yeah. So yeah. But there's been help all along, and it could have been there for us the entire time, but we didn't know that we had to ask for that library of help.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's two things. The thing that frequently happens is that something is purchased and there's no training involved. So somebody may have bought Linewise, right? And
they
then did. It gets turned over to the tech department and they says, here, we got this thing.
Yep.
And there's frequently lots of settings and they're all in different places and they're in places that make total sense to some engineer somewhere.
Right.
But, you know, the guy that's actually been told to turn this on, like, doesn't understand, like, where all these settings are. Or frequently what I've found is that they are labeled or explained, like, badly. So it's like, you know, it says, turn the dingles on. It's like, okay, what's a dingle?
Right.
You know, and it's like, okay, well, what does that do? So there may be that issue. And then secondly, is this an extra pay kind of thing? Or is this,
nope.
Or, you know, that kind of thing too. So But that's frequently what happens is somebody makes this decision. They go to a conference and they say, oh, this is great. We're going to bring in blah, blah, blah. And we're going to bring in Dinglewise. And so then somebody goes, well, how much is Dinglewise? And so, oh, I can afford it. And so they buy Dinglewise. And then it's like eventually it gets passed down to, you know, somebody in the technology department. And it's like, well, we bought Dinglewise. And it's like, okay. And it's like, and, you know, do I have to upload users? Do we have to set up an SFTP? There's all these different questions. And then there's like, and what is it for? What do we want turned on? What do we not want turned on? And what are the implications of doing that? And those are questions that frequently aren't discussed. So, one of those things. My favorite conversations almost always started the same way. Three words. Can't you just ... Yeah. Can't you just turn on this? It's like, well, yes, but if we turn that on, understand that that means that everybody gets to do that. Well, I want everybody to do that. Well, but that's the way that this thing works. But I went to a conference. Yes, you did. Right. kind of thing.
Our district didn't provide PD on this. They just opened it for us. And then, pardon me a second.
And, you know, every microphone comes with a cough button. And it is frequently hard to get to that cough button.
Yeah, right, software.
And sometimes the cough button doesn't work. And, like, my cough button is actually behind a pop filter. And sometimes my cough button works and sometimes it doesn't, but hey. So, if there was a lot of advertising involved here, we would probably do some post and, but hey.
Hey, I think our first sponsor should be Dinglewise.
and Hazel.
Hazel's getting involved in it too. Right. So, but if you don't provide PD, and there's a library of help. And it would kind of make sense to just open it up and let people, because people are using the tool. And then they get frustrated with the tool. And they say, can we get rid of this? Because it's not helpful. I don't know, it seems like you would want it there as default on for the teachers. And then give them the option to turn it off. Again, it's things designed by engineers. And they think of things not in the same way that teachers do. And I get that. We had that conversation. But also, by the same token, Linewise was the first one to say, we will help you solve this problem.
So. Yeah. And again, it frequently is that the person who's actually pushing the buttons doesn't get the same background, doesn't get the same understanding as to why we're doing this, what we want to do with it, which pieces we can use, and those things. So, you know, I do want to kind of stand up for some of those folks, because it's very, very frustrating when it's like, here's this thing, and it's like nobody explains really why. And then again, I can't tell you how frequently it is that one person has a vision for what they want, and that vision may or may not be accurate, and that vision doesn't get shared with everybody else. And there's lots of good stuff out there. And I know that this is an audio podcast, not a visual podcast, but you'll have to, I'll kind of walk you through this. I used to always say, there's this much good stuff out there, and I'm holding my hands like 2 feet apart. And it's like, we can do any of this that you want, but we can't do all of this. We can do this much stuff, and I'm now holding my hands like 2 inches apart. We can do this much really well. Whichever 2 inches of these, this 2 foot line that you want, we can do, but we can't do all of it. And that's frequently what happens, is that there's a lack of communication as to what people want. But the good news is, frequently, if you, once you find that out, you can tell somebody and they can go in and click the little button.
Right. And that's what I'm going to do here in about a week or two. I'm going to say, hey, remember that conversation we had 6 weeks ago?
And Sean, your sound is a little bit scratchy, and I don't know if it's your internet connection, my internet connection, or something else, but I'm going to monitor. I'm going to pause for a second.
Okay.
All right. Well, we'll hope that that has cleared some things up, but we'll see. So, you know, that is one of the things is, and especially if you can find out who that person is and be nice to them, get them on your side, the kid that's clicking the buttons, because it's frequently the same person.
Yeah.
Unless you're in a really big district. So, okay.
Yeah.
So do you also tested out some interesting educational tech?
So I've been playing with Gradebox a little bit. It's brand new. It claims that you put in the prompt and the rubric and it will find the standard. That kind of works, but I can also put in my own standards and it'll grade it based on that standard. So I'm putting in a few test objects right now and I'm going to try that here because I think I'm going to use that as my PLC data when we start the school year, because you usually don't have a lot of PLC data because admin says, we want you to build relationships first. Okay, I can do that.
Which is good, right?
Yeah.
Building relationships first is good.
Yep. And then I got a chance to play with the ViewSonic TV3207 touchscreen monitor.
So okay.
If you have a Promethean board, you take this little monitor and you put it in front of you. You can draw on the Promethean board or any screen for that matter without having to like turn around. So you want to catch Abdul when he's throwing that hummus across the room. Or, you know, or when he's making faces at Melanie, I'm just making up names here. You know, it gives you a chance then to be facing the class at all the times. And
right.
But it comes with a pen, and it's a little more articulate. It's like having a 32-inch, Troy's going to love this part, a 32-inch tablet on
yeah.
which to yeah, design yeah. and build and draw on. So that is very intriguing. I noticed that there's a bunch of refurbs on Amazon, so that might be something to try.
That could be a good thing or a bad thing if there's a whole bunch of refurbs.
Right.
Like, wait a minute. Wait. Why are there so many refurbs out there?
I will say that there were a ton of these out on the show floor. And my guess is these got sent to the, these were the demonstration displays, and they're the ones that are getting being sent to, because they can't sell them new.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, the tech floor was interesting. ISTE does a third party certification of, exhibit floor persons, the IPVO pen camera. I don't know if we talked about that or not. That got a best in show award. Oh, okay. So IPVO, I like IPVO document cameras, and everybody has their favorites. This is just my personal favorite. I think the guys over at IPVO are pretty spunky folks. It's a Taiwanese company. And they brought they have a mascot now. It's a little dog. He's absolutely adorable. Super friendly. He was also on the show floor, making friends. And, IPVO has a revamped version of their pen camera where it sits on that post and you could take it off. You could hold it up and wave it around the room. You could take and put it right down on top of something, and it can act like a magnifying glass. you can shoot it on the big screen so that everybody can get and see. And it used to be you had to put an attachment on that had a light and a magnifier lens. This, you don't have to do that. It will automatically put a light on whatever object you've got right directly underneath the camera, and will also then magnify so that you can see the nice details. Like I have a Roman coin that I put on the screen with the kids. It's the one of the common things I do. And I'll take that pen camera and go right down to the surface of the coin and zoom in so they can see the facial feature of the emperor that's on there, and then the writing that's around the edges. And then we have to have a conversation about why it's not perfectly round, you know, and why is the image not perfectly center? And then we can talk about these things, like what happened over time type of thing. This will, I don't have to have that attachment anymore for my pen camera if I wanted to get this. It's kind of a nice little, it's a nice little device. And I think I want to use it with Gradebox, gradebox.ai. And I think we talked about this just a little bit, but this is right. The AI that will grade your formative assessments the kids put underneath the camera. And they don't even have to drop it and walk away. They scan it and they walk away holding their formative assessment in their hand, and it keeps the paper off your desk. So I'm building some of those formative assessments inside Gradebox to use with the pen camera, and we'll see how that goes. Well, I have a pen camera. I don't have this particular pen camera. I have the older one. It's, matter of fact, it's so old. It's one of the cameras that I took to China when we went to China and had to have document cameras. Because they didn't tell us they were going to have document cameras. So I brought this as a document camera.
Yes.
Yes. All right.
Document cameras are pretty pretty useful. And again, in my past life, we had an issue because one of the elementary teachers went to a conference and saw a document camera and had the principal buy a bunch of them. Mm-hmm. They were not a good choice. The iPivos would have been a way better choice. And then there was much frustration that had occurred because they're like, well, this doesn't work. It's like, right. But this should work. Yeah, well, see... This is where Macintoshes have certain connection ways to connect. And yeah, so no, just know that it should be, you should also check. So yeah.
Years ago, I bought a document camera. It was a nice little document camera, but because the company didn't bother to take care of the software, I had this right. Beautiful, heavy, clunky thing, which was now a brick, giant brick on my desk, simply because the software that it used wasn't updated, wasn't maintained. That's another thing I like about iPivo is these guys are pretty good about maintaining their software. And when they build something, they're fairly committed to it. The guys over at Swivel made that interactive device where the kids can go and ask the device questions to help them in class with stuff. Mm-hmm. And they've completely pivoted on that, or swiveled. I guess I should say that. They swiveled away from it being a student assist device, and now it is strictly a teacher teaching monitoring device. And they gave admin access so they can just go and watch anytime they want. And it's like, I don't know if I'd buy that. I might have bought it for the other thing, but I don't know if I'd buy it for this thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
and that frequently happens as well as companies change their perspective or their how most people are using it and where it is that people find value. And if you're not in that band, that can be frustrating as well.
Yeah. They are branching out and doing a language translation feature. Mm-hmm. And they've built the microphones for it. but they're using a third-party software for it.
Mm-hmm.
The microphones are really good, and they pick up voice really well. And the microphones can also be used for other things too, like they make video conferencing stuff, and that's primarily what those are for. But the language translation on it seems to be pretty good. I only did it with French, which is pretty standard. I would like to see how it does it with Arabic, because there are so many different flavors of Arabic.
Right.
Yeah. So okay. That was the show floor. And then we talked about Inclusive 52 Executive Functioning. The book was telling you.
Yes. Yep.
So it came. Well, it came, but it came like a week after the conference. And so I bought a copy of it there at the conference because.
What the heck?
The publishing company knows what they're doing. Yeah, let's give it to them. Everybody else has to wait. I was one of the everybody else. So I went and I bought one at the conference. I'm going to take the other one and I'm going to share it with somebody else on my team. And there's a number of different cool ideas inside the Inclusive 52 Executive Functioning book, Weekly Strategies to Help Learners Thrive. And then I said, well, let's use the AI as an assistant and let's build out some of these strategies in 20-minute blocks for advisory at the beginning of the year, teaching these kids how to do these executive functioning strategies.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I've been doing. And I set up a framework that took about an hour. And after that, we got into a workflow and just started cranking these things out. It's turning out pretty nice. I'm building these and I'm putting them in a shared drive for the team. So if the team wants to use it, the team can use it. And then we came up with an idea, both AI and I. Do you remember the AI said, because the first thing it wanted to do was it wanted to build a branding and marketing campaign. I was like, sure, let's see what this looks like.
Sure.
We're going to brand this? It goes, yeah, we need to brand this. We need to like make it flashy. Oh, okay, let's make it flashy. But then it said we need some hallway advertising, like to remind the kids that they need to be on this throughout the day. And I was like, oh, that's a good idea. And I said, what if we built like road signs, like the old Burma Shave road signs? I was like, yeah, I remember Burma Shave. I was like, no, you don't. But
no, you
thanks
don't.
For playing. I appreciate that. It makes me feel better. And so we came up with. You know, the old Burma Shave signs had some sort of catchy phrase. It rhymed. It was these little snippets of poetry. And at the end of each one, it would say, Burma Shave, right? And so that's what we did. It came up with a slogan. And at the end of all these things to help the kids remember to use their executive functioning strategy for the week, it says, and I forget what see how good it is. It was 4 weeks ago when I built this, or 5 weeks ago when I built this.
Yep.
It has the catch line for the campaign. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to take the little magnets that have got a hook on them. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to take the hanging plant chains, all metal, so that when maintenance comes through and says, that's going to start a fire. No, it's not. You're not going to burn steel. Thank you. But then what I'll do is I'll print off the signs front and back. So if you're going down the hall one direction, sure. You see one Burma Shave style advertisement for the executive strategy. And if you're walking back the other way, you see a different slogan reminding you of the same concept.
There you go.
Yep. So as you walk back and forth, you get these funny things overhead. And so I got a Google Drive full of these documents. And when I print them off, I'll be able to just print them. I'll ask the library person downstairs. Excuse me. Again, this is going to be that kind of show, folks. I'm sorry. I'm going to ask him to laminate them. And then I'll just swap them out on Friday before I leave. And they're ready for the next week. I'll hang these in the hallway. Down the middle of the hallway. And since seventh graders like to touch everything, you know they're going to jump and try to touch the signs, which will then, if they're just simply papered, they'll tear and I'll feel like printing a second copy. But yeah, so there you go.
Hopefully they read them while they're slapping them.
Well, what's going to happen is somebody's going to say, hey, did you see what Miss McGurr put up? And then that's what I want, is them to then
right.
Yeah, go. And I maybe you can come back.
Maybe you can make them braille. So when there's
yeah. All right. So after you laminate them, I need you to run them through the braille. That's the funny thing.
Make them braille, and then the kids go, "Why are there, Mr. McGurr? Why are there bumps on this?"
Well, and then the
well, that's so when you slap it, you can read the braille.
And the divots are the message for the other side. That's funny. Anyway, yeah. So, yeah. Well, as far as I know, we don't have any of those types of kids on the team this year. In fact, I don't think I've ever had a kid like that. Anyway, it's neither here nor there. I'm going to give it a try. And like I said, Monday it'll be teach the kid the strategy. And then have them practice it and use it. And at the end of the week, we're going to give them a chance to evaluate their usage of it and say, did it work? Did it not work? That's fine. If it didn't work, we got another one coming up next week. If it did work, I want you to keep using the strategy.
Right.
Yep.
And you have 52 of these.
No. No.
It says inclusive these, 52.
It does. And there are 52 strategies, but I do not have the time to sit down and do 52. And the other thing is that not all of these strategies are for the kids to do. Some of these are your classroom arrangement. Some of these are,
That's what I was going to ask. How did you narrow these down? Do you know how many you narrowed these down to? Or
I'd have to look again. I forgot. I think I've got 22.
Okay.
And I tried to interleave them so that they support each other. So if there's one thing a kid says, oh, I like this part of it, but not this part, I can't seem to do that. That's okay. You know what? You're going to see that in another strategy somewhere else down the line, and it may be a better fit for you.
Right. Cool.
Yeah.
All right. So it is now August 1st.
It is.
It is. And that means that it's kind of funny because I started thinking about the return to school, and like the return to school for me is going to be very, very different this year.
It's funny that you're thinking about that. Yeah.
So I have to do my application to become a substitute. I have not done that yet, but that's on my August to-do list. So I will be applying to become a substitute. But it's like, you know, somebody had asked me how retirement was, and I'm like, I still feel like I'm on vacation.
Yeah.
You know, it hasn't like hit yet that, I don't have this whole thing that I'm going back to. I'll be subbing because I can control what days that I work or don't work and how many days I work and all that good stuff. But so we'll see how that works out. And you have your back to school marching orders already, right? You've got schedule for, you go back on August 26th, right?
5th. Yep. 25th.
Yeah.
Yes, I shared those marching orders with you. We had quite the conversation. Yeah. So I found a shirt. I shared it with a colleague. I found a shirt that says, it's a teacher shirt. It says, does this shirt make me look professionally developed?
There you go.
I want to wear that the first day.
Cool. Yeah. Cause it's normal to have a couple of days of professional development and classroom time and frequently annual training kind of stuff, those things that you have to do kind of thing every year, get those done and out of the way.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Another conversation that we had pre-show was about associations. And how many associations that you're part of and all of that. And there's a lot of associations now that are free.
Correct. Yeah.
That it used to be. And then And there's a couple that are like free if you sign up during these 2 weeks.
Right.
Which I find interesting. But we had a little bit of a conversation this morning, pre-show, because it's like, how many associations are you part of? Why are you part of those associations? Because a lot of the conferences that I've either seen or been part of, they seem to be getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And I'm thinking that, you know, part of that is we now have other ways of connecting up. We have other ways of finding information, right? It used to be that associations were kind of like a gatekeeper of really good information, really useful information. It was where you met like-minded people and interacted with them. And I still think that's a hugely important part, is that face-to-face meeting for conferences. But the conferences that I've seemed to have been part of and the associations that I was part of, most of those have expired with, because most of them are like July 1st to June 30th kind of things for me.
Right.
So most of that in-person stuff was really, really important, but it's like hard to do. There's dues, like, you know, frequently there's dues involved. And sometimes, a lot of times it's only $30. I did renew my my main computer user group. I did renew that for this year. And I can't remember the name of that group for some reason. It has just left me.
Is that the Actum group?
Actum, thank you. You know it. I don't. I didn't renew. Like that. I did renew my Actum. Good God. My Actum. I paid my, I think it was $20.
This is why you keep me on the show.
Yeah. Surprised you keep me on the show. So I did renew that one. And it's funny because there was like things that I had to go through and change my email address.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because it's like I had switched a lot of things over to the work email address. And, oh, good God. Okay. The passwords application in, for the Mac password application drives me nuts because I don't really use it. And yet it always wants to, pop up. So anyway, I did renew my Actum, so I still am in a member of Actum, but there's other ones that I had to drop out of because, like, some of them are conditional, like you've got to have this job to be part of the group kind of thing.
Yes.
So how many organizations are you currently part of?
Not Actum.
Correct.
So, well, McCall is free. And so I'm with McCall. They didn't remember that I was with McCall. So I had to re-sign up with McCall, which I found interesting. I have to be part of MAMSE because I sit on the board.
Yeah.
And then I also have a membership with AMLE. Okay. And then I have a membership with ISTE because you have to have that in order to go to the conference.
Right.
And also get access to Stretch AI organizations beyond that.
Any history or social studies kind of ones?
Oh, NCSS. And then it used to be you could do a joint with MCSS, but I let that one go just because I just don't have the time to do it all. That, and if you joined NCSS, you could do a dual membership thing. And NCSS dropped the ball on that. So I actually got MCSS for a year, 2 years, an extra year, because they messed up on that. And MCSS said, we're gonna make you whole. So the part where you weren't a member and you paid for it, we're gonna give you an extra year. And I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
So other than that,
I think that part of the challenge here is we now have other ways of connecting and interacting, right? Like a lot of these groups are on Facebook, or they have like a Reddit group or a Discord group, or Slack seems to be going away.
Oh,
at least from my experience, I'm seeing less and less in Slack, by the way.
Wait till we get to later in the show.
Okay. So there's other ways of connecting and communicating and all of that. The thing that I think you really miss out on is that person-to-person, face-to-face meeting. And that is just so important. I just think that that is so crucial. And I just wonder if that's going to, how that impacts folks. Because I think it does have an impact.
Well, I had an interesting experience with that at McCullough ran an AI conference. Wednesday it was for elementary. Thursday was for 6-12, middle school, high school. So I went to the one on Thursday. And Shannon Miller presented. They flew her in from Iowa for this. And it was not a very large group, which I'm okay with. I'm totally fine with that. It was interesting in that I was a little slower to pack things up, and Shannon Miller had done her keynote, and she came up and started talking to me. I did not initiate. She came up and started just talking to me. And that never happens at a conference where the keynote person comes out in the crowd and just start. But she came up, and I would not have had that chance. If there were 200 people there, that is not something that would have happened. Right.
Right. And
I apologize. My phone is on my computer. Oh, give me 1 second. Sorry. So I had a very interesting conversation with her. And she's not taught as long as I have, but she's from my generation of teachers. And we had a conversation about way back in the day. Way back in the... I apologize. Somebody keeps calling. the downside of hooking up your phone to your computer so you can call your relatives. But I had a good conversation with her, and I would not have had that conversation if there was 200 people there. Nicholas Provenzano and I had a conversation, and Nick is a movie teacher. If you follow him on Twitter or social media, I would not have had to have been able to have a conversation with him because he is so hugely popular and everybody does want to talk to him about things, but it was just me and one person in his session. And so we got to have a conversation that we wouldn't have had to have otherwise. So I kind of like that. And you get to pick the brain of the presenter. I don't think presenters are prepared for that, though, because they think, I've got my presentation, I'm going to do this, right? And they set the table and say, we're going to eat these ideas, lay it out like a buffet. Or not a buffet, like a family-style dinner. When actually you should think about it in terms of a buffet. And then you say, I want to talk about these dishes on the buffet. But there's only a few of us in here, and what we probably should do is look at the entire buffet. You tell me what you want to eat off of the buffet, and let's talk about that. And I think that'd been a good idea. But I don't think presenters are ready for that because they just don't know how many people are going to show and how many people are not going to show.
I think that really varies based on the presenter, though, too. I think especially a lot of the edgy celebrity kind of people have a, this is what I'm doing. This is my stick. I practiced this. I've perfected this. This has become my identity thing. And I think sometimes when you get a practitioner, that they're much more willing to say, okay, look, I have this presentation here and we can go through it. Or this is what we're, I was going to talk about. Which are there pieces you want me to focus on? Do you want to focus on this? Do you want to talk about this kind of thing?
So, yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And that would also make for an interesting conference experience as well, because it takes LobbyCon and it brings it into the session room. Yeah.
All right. I do want to mention today is also World Wide Web Day.
Okay.
If you are someone who uses the web, know that today is World Wide Web Day. You know, kind of something that popped up. All right. Speaking of World Wide Web, let's take a look not at the World Wide Web, but the social web.
Oh, well, Eric Kurtz put together a document about 5 weeks ago, more than 5 weeks ago, and it is the ISTE document. I put a link into the show notes for the post. He said, are you attending hashtag ISTE Live? Well, if you are, you're doing it next year. You're not doing it this year. But there's all the session information and all of the conversation, the back channel conversation the folks had, is a lot of it is started there. And so by all means, go take a look. There's session resources. There's information resources there that you could pull from. The entire document is not necessarily relevant to you right now, but you know there are things you could mine and pull out of there that you could use in your classroom. Bernie Goldbach, Top Gold at topgold.ie. While watching students write with AI, some researchers saw their subjects seek out red threads of personal outlines. Discarding AI suggestions, which is interesting. We had a conversation at the conference on Thursday, and a lot of folks were talking about how in industry, bosses or managers are sending AI slop to their subordinates, and they are hugely resenting the lack of respect, or they feel like they're wasting their time. If you didn't take the time enough to put into it, then why am I doing this? So it's interesting to see some of the response. My experience with the kids in May, when kids are doing their presentations, one kid got up and started reading off obviously something that AI had written. Mm-hmm. And I had a number of kids while I'm sitting out there with the students, a number of kids leaned over to me and whispered, "That's AI. That's AI." And they were offended that he had done that to them. And he's smiling like he's getting away with something. But every kid in the room knows he didn't do it and that he didn't learn. Yeah. And they were offended that he wasted their time like that. I think that's something that's coming down the pike as well.
Hang on, because I want to go back on this one a little bit. What are red threads of personal outlines? What does that mean?
I think that is something that is indicative. So Bernie is Irish, and I think that's an Irish phrase.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, because I know each of the individual words there.
Right.
But yeah. When you put them together, I want to be clear that I'm understanding. I'm picking up what you're putting down, so to say. I started reading the link there, and I'm not a fast enough reader to make sure that I got all of this, because some of this seems like they're saying that kids aren't using AI to write the assignment, but then they say that they're using – They're using AI to generate the prompts that they're using to write the assignment. And it's like, okay.
Yeah, they're also using it to write the outlines for their papers. And then they're going in and writing the papers, which is kind of the way that a lot of folks are wanting students to use AI. All right, so first I get the ideas and I list out my ideas. I use AI then to help me create the framework for me then to go and do the writing. And that was another thing that came out of ISTE as well, is the research that's being done with AI, it falls into two results. If kids are using AI properly, it is actually a springboard for giving them some really, really good gains in learning. If they're using it improperly, very immaturely, and just using it as an answer bot, you're seeing huge deficits, like negative growth in learning. So this is if they're using it right, man, it's going to be a great tool. And if they're using it wrong, man, is it going to hurt?
Yeah.
And what do you do for that kid? Like, and one of the things about middle school is they can only see about 2 weeks out, and all they want to get things done right now so they can go and play their games. A lot of it is that immediate gratification thing. What do you do for that kid who makes that choice to turn it into an answer bot and doesn't make that growth? Because now that kid has got to go, they're not going to be able to go back and learn it again themselves, because seventh graders don't do that. And now they're always behind, and they're never going to be being caught up. I think we see that when we look at reading, right? Because there's this huge drop off after middle school in particular, because the kids just can choose not to do the reading and they don't. And so they never develop that skill, and it weakens over time. And I think this isn't going to be a weakening of skill. This is going to be an atrophy, like flesh eating bacteria of that skill of learning. What happens then? Right? Do you graduate that kid? Right? Because they don't have the knowledge they should have when they walk out of school. What kind of remediation do you do? There's no credit recovery for this. This is teaching character and teaching a life skill. It's hard.
And this makes me really think about, we did the portrait of a graduate. You know, that was a big thing probably 10, 15 years ago now. And I wonder if people are redoing a portrait of a graduate, and like, what does it mean now? Because that's changed.
Yeah. And Richard Collada came out with the portrait of an AI ready learner last year, and they've reinforced that, and they further developed it at this year's conference. And I think they've had to do that because so much has changed from the first time he presented his ideas. And I think it's going to be had to be refined and looked at again at next year's conference too, because things will have changed so much between last year and next year, and that we're still figuring things out in between. Last year was all about, when I went to ISTE, it was all about how do I use AI and how do the kids use AI? And this year it was all about forget that. They're using AI. It's not about that. It's got to be about literacy and using AI effectively for learning. And therein lies the... So we talked last year about gradual release. So this is a good time to remind our listeners to go back and listen to our ISTE show a year ago. We talked about the gradual release method, right? Give the kids the AI, but gradually release them as you train them on how to use it. And this is where gradual release is going to become a huge factor. And you and I both know there's going to be parents out there who just give the keys to the Ferrari to the kid and say, go drive. What they should be doing is giving them something with a good frame and foundation and saying, you're going to learn the skills of driving first. And then we're going to move on to the really fun part of driving. And same thing happened with the screen. We're rabbit holing now. The same thing happened with the whole screens discussion. Research is showing that it's not about screen time. It's about what you do with your screen time. It's the same thing with reading, right? in order to grow, you have to read quality stuff that stretches your reading skills. If a kid sits there and eats or reads the same thing all the time and never grows, then is it really doing them any bonus effect or any helpful effect? That therein lies the question. And I think we are at the cusp of doing it wrong again, and not because of anything that teachers are going to do, but because we haven't talked and partnered with parents and said, you need to partner with us on this. You can't just give us your kids to teach. You've got to be a partner in this. And so when we talk about screen time, we also have to talk about it at home. And when we talk about literacy and AI literacy, you just can't give the kids willy-nilly access at home. You've got to be the parent in this situation. And you and I both know that's going to be the biggest struggle about using AI in school. It's going to be things that are outside the teacher's control.
I think there's tons of things that we're still trying to figure out with AI. But I think what you bring up is absolutely fundamental to the conversation, is what happens outside of the school is going to be crucial. And it's one of the conversations that may not happen because it's a very difficult conversation. It's a very complex conversation. It's much easier to blame the school and say, can't you just dot, dot, dot.
Right.
You know, use AI the way I want you to use AI. Which for some parents is going to be not at all. I don't want my kid using AI at all in school. And for some parents is going to be, I want them to use it to like all the time because that's the world they're going to be in. So, you know, navigating that is going to be quite fun.
Yeah, I think the starting question for parents has to be, what do you want your kid to get out of school? Let's start there.
Isn't that the eternal question? Like, for society, we still haven't agreed what we want kids to get out of school. It is I want you to train them to be good little widgets to fit into my business. The fun thing is I want you to train them to be the widgets I'm going to need in 10 years. And they don't know, and we don't know what that looks like, kind of thing.
And I think in some districts, we stopped asking that question. And I think we have parents coming. Well, I think it also depends. See, this is where it becomes important to, you have to read the room in your community. And Elizabeth, I think that is very true. I think you're absolutely right. But my situation is a little different, right? Because most of my population are immigrants from the Middle East. And those parents have come straight out in conversations and have said there's only two things that are important. Board member and I were talking about this. And the community is coming up to him and saying, don't you dare ask for a millage about anything. He's like, if we need money, we're going to have to ask. And they're telling them there's only two things we're interested in, wrestling and soccer. The rest of it doesn't matter. Because the community that they come from, that's all the things important. A lot of these kids that are coming in directly from overseas, we have to tell them that there are other subjects that are important besides math and the Quran. Otherwise, that's been school for them. That's all they know. And so when our newcomers come to the newcomer class, a lot of it is, well, over here, school is not that. School is so much, much, much more. I think that's the other thing too, is we have to narrow it down. Some parents, all they want is their kid to be able to go out and get a job.
Right.
And some of them want their kids to go to college, and some of them, it's not, I just want my kid to play sports. I really don't care what they accomplish in anything else. Just make that part happen. And so do you differentiate?
Right. And again, I think that that's one of those kind of eternal questions that we've been dealing with. And we continue to deal with. And that's why I say a portrait of a graduate is probably something that can be, that is going to be different for each community. There's going to be a lot of commonalities, but it's going to be different. The focus is going to be slightly different for each community. And I think it's a great conversation to have. So, you know, not an easy one, though.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. We're good?
We're good.
All right. Does it get the stamp of fact checked and verified by Troy?
I don't know about that, but.
Okay. All right. I just want to make sure where to put the stamp. Where are we at? Oh, middle web. Dr. Debbie Silver posted an article on imagine teachers sharing across five generations when one generation of teachers dismisses another. Both lose the chance to listen, learn, and grow in our intergenerational workplaces. Which I think is a pretty good idea, right? Like, what does one generation leave to the next generation of teachers? Especially since the next generation that's coming up, there's a huge corpus of knowledge that just retires and is never mined again. And we're suffering from a deficit of teachers, And if a huge influx of people come in, you know, they lose all of that institutional and experiential knowledge, that has just walked away, retired, and is gone. Interesting that they're having that. That was been proposed. I put a link in the show notes. MiddleWeb is a great resource. Talk about associations. This is one I should join. It is a it's a thread. It's not a thread. It's a not Reddit. What's the other one? Anyways, there's a much better, deeper resource put together by Dr. John Norton. Wonderful man, nice guy. And he does this monthly. This is his retirement project. He does it up there in the mountains of Asheville, North Carolina. Beautiful, beautiful place to retire to and do this. So, if you get a chance, pop over to the link. Larry Ferlazzo, he has not popped up my feed in quite a while, but he did this week. And he has this week's free and useful artificial intelligence tools for the classroom over at larryferlazzo.edublogs. So Larry's always got great stuff. Pop over there, take a look at some of his free tools. And then AMLE posted, as the new school year approaches, invest yourself with AMLE's virtual experiences for middle-level educators. You'll find opportunities to learn, connect, and stay engaged on the AMLE events calendar. So they're doing a lot of virtual events that probably state affiliates should probably glom onto and point people towards those pages and see if they could do some, maybe a little revenue sharing. Might be helpful there. So, yeah. So that's stuff that's out there on the social web. Hey, I got two resources for you this week.
Okay.
Maybe three. All right. Really quick. I know that we've talked about Google Earth in the past.
Yeah, and there was a little controversy this week over Google Earth.
Okay, I'm going to let you bring up that part of it.
Okay, hit it.
But I'm going to talk about, and this might be tying right into it, but what if you could bring the past to Google Earth, right, as a social studies person? What if you went and took an image of the Forum in Rome or the Colosseum in Rome? And you've got that Google Earth image and you click on the 3D part so it comes up in 3D. And then you go over and you click Nana Banana and you say, hey, what if you could show this to me? Put this back in 4 BC and I'd like to use this in my classroom. So it'll take and it'll pop it and it'll AI generate it as a image that's been 4 BC-ified. Mm-hmm. And then you can give the kids like an idea of what it would have looked like in 4 BC. Is it an exact historical representation? Absolutely not. Because you could also say, hey, show me what this would look like in 2050 BC. And it'll give you what it thinks it should look like in 2050 BC, right?
Correct.
So it's historical fiction, which is always useful with the disclaimer that it's historical fiction. Now, I understand. I just got updated that there's been some controversy over Google Earth.
There's been some controversy, and they have rolled this back.
Let's spill the tea on that.
This is no longer available. Apparently, some folks were taking and using schools and saying, like, well, what if it was hit by a drone strike?
Oh.
So Google has apologized, and they have said that they understand that Google Earth is an important resource for lots of people. So they have rolled it back.
Including people who are.
Yeah. It's yeah. It's in the we can't have nice things category. Oh,
there you go.
Right?
Yep.
So, yes. So, yeah, it is not available right now.
Okay. Well, good for them for catching that. I have a question for you.
I have an answer for you.
Excellent. You brought up the whole Slack thing.
I did.
Yeah. So what are the ways that you have used Slack in the past?
I've used it for kind of some organizational things.
Amongst the people on your team.
Yeah, actually, one of my kids asked me once, the team that she was working with, they had to coordinate the use of a greenhouse. And, like, there was only so many keys, and they had to, like, you know, who's going to lock it up, and and they ended up using Slack for that. But I haven't used Slack in quite a while, so.
Well, I want you to imagine that there was a Slack, but for AI agents. So about a year ago, we made a big thing about me investing in and buying into an AI, right? And I chose ChatGPT because it could create images for me. And then about 3 weeks ago, Claude came out for Claude for Teachers. And any teacher, any verified educator could get Claude for free,
yes.
At least for a year. So I now have both Claude and ChatGPT. And one of the things I've had fun with is creating something in Claude, creating the same thing in ChatGPT, taking their work product and then copy pasting it into the other and saying, evaluate this. What areas, what would you improve on? How could we make this better? How could this better fit what we're looking for? And then I get different suggestions from each one. And eventually I can synthesize something into, you know, I like these pieces of that one and these pieces from that one. Let's build it all into one thing so we get the best of both. All right. So there's a Slack for AI agents, and it's called Buzz. Buzz is a free open source team workspace built by Block, which is Jack Dorsey's company. Mm-hmm. And released on July 21st, 2026. It looks like Slack. It's got channels, threads, DMs, voice, the whole nine yards. With one fundamental difference. AI agents aren't integrations or bots. They're the team members with their own cryptographic identity, their own permissions, and their own audit trail. It also ships with code repositories, which puts it in competition with GitHub, too.
Yeah,
so you go in.
This is actually built off of Nostr, which is an open source, decentralized project as well. So,
yeah. So you can actually have conversations with multiple bots and have them working mm-hmm. on things separately or together. And then you can bring it. So you stop the whole copy paste thing and you start. Right. Yeah, you can. And then you can have them and you can start training them together instead of separately. Save yourself some time.
Yep.
There you go. All right. Last thing I have is National History Day 2027. The theme is officially announced. The website is up. The resources are there. I really like this year's website because they've posted a number of graphic organizers and supports for middle schoolers.
Oh, cool.
So you don't have to worry about creating your own. You can go get theirs, and they're going to give you access right to the Google Drive, to the documents, and so you could pull it right into your Google Drive and have those documents and send them straight to the kids if you wanted to do that. So
that's awesome.
That's there, ready to go. I'm looking forward to it this coming year.
So you're going to do National History this year as well?
Yes. Now, I'm not going to have it August ready. We usually do it in January, but there are certain things that I'll have to get ready that'll be August ready to do.
Okay. That's nice. Then since you brought that up, I will talk about this briefly. Over at TCEA, they have...
Oh, we love those guys.
They have the digital cleanout. Organize your teaching files this summer. I've talked about this with several of other people about how do you organize and do you organize your Google Drive? Because there's two camps. There is the just throw everything in Google Drive and you'll search and find it. Mm-hmm. And then there's the people that are like, they organize, you know, folders and subfolders. They're actually tags, but whatever. Folders and subfolders, and everything has to go in a certain place. And you can spend a lot of time doing that. And of course, there's people like everywhere in between, right? There's people that have two folders, and there's people that, yeah, I generally put things in folders. But over at TCEA, they say that you should declutter and, you know, they give you some tips on this. I don't know. I've seen a lot of people leave districts and seen the results of their Google Drive. And it's frequently a mess. So, and I don't know how much is worth, honestly, I don't know how much, you know, your time is worth, because you could spend a whole bunch of time just finding stuff. Just cleaning stuff out. On the other hand, it can be very frustrating when you need something and you can't find it. And I will say that, ironically, Google search in Google Drive is not all that great.
I 100% agree. Yep.
It's like, really? You couldn't find that because I didn't use these words in exactly the same order? All of the words are there.
Yep.
But because I did not put them in the right order, you can't find this. That is frustrating. So I get this on both sides. And what it will say is naming conventions. If you can establish naming conventions for yourself, that will save you just a ton of issues. So anyway, over at TCEA, there's a whole article on that. And you can go check that out.
Now I have a question for you.
Okay.
Would that be the Tallinn, the Turkmenistan, or the Tbilisi Computer Education Association? Which one?
That is, of course, TCEA, which, as you may remember, is all about... one of our southern states.
Well, that's okay. All right. So I'm going to hop back to a previous conversation. ISTE, of course, changed their name, right? Mm-hmm. And they've got all these state affiliates. And all of the state affiliates still have some sort of technology aspect to all of their names. Are the affiliates going to change?
That's more of a you thing. Because you're bigger on all those different affiliates and stuff than I am. One of the things I am big on, though, is hearing from all of you guys out there. So head over to middleschoolmatters.com. There's a couple links there where you can click on and get in touch with us. I also would love it if you would share the show with maybe you have a new teacher coming on board. This can give you guys something to in common to talk about, to break the ice and create those relationships, build those relationships with that. And of course, we'd love it if you'd head over to the podcast catcher of your choice and give us a 5-star rating. Tell us why Sean is the world's greatest co-show host. We'd really appreciate that as well. And let's see. I think for the next few weeks we're generally gonna have a show, but you never know if things come up. So, but we are planning to have a show. With that, this has been Middle School Matters for middle school educators who care. All opinions expressed on this podcast are exclusively the opinions of the host and guest and not indicative of any employer.